This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Senior Memorial Cup. The Warriors going to be there in Louisiana, and we're going to take that cup home. We do what we say. You know something, Tony Schiavone? We're what this thing is country's all about. It's a violent society, and we're the product of our environment. What we say we're going to do, and we get it done. Let me tell you something, Russians. If we want that six-man competition, we'll take it home with us. And let me tell you something, Nikita and I will call off. You open up your big mouth again and try to discredit the Warriors, we'll slap your head straight off.
You know, Tony Schiavone, wrestling is a sport of opportunists. I've heard Ivan Koloff out here crying about making a foul ball fair by changing the baselines. Well, it just can't be done, Ivan Koloff. Cry all you want. You went down. Now, there's also been talk by Ric Flair. Now, Ric Flair, you're the cream of the crop. You're the blue chip of wrestling. But on top of that cream is a tiny little film, and it's the scum. It's the Legion of Doom, Ric Flair. Now, I want the Midnight Express to think about something. We're looking for you, tell them, Hawk.
Hey, Ric Flair, I could spend a while talking to you and about you, but you're not worth it. I'll tell you one thing, though. I got more women in this world talking about my tongue than you do about your stinking suits, cars, and jewelry. And as for the Russians and Baron von Raschke, I got you listed as three rats. And you know what that makes us? Decon.
Jimmy Cornette, we're looking for you.
All right. I wouldn't want to be in your shoes. We're coming right back.
And as you can tell from what you heard at the beginning of the program here, little melancholy to start. Welcome, everyone, PTB Wrestling Junkies, to this week's episode of the NWA Saturday Special. I am your co-host, Scott Criscolo. Joining me, as always, the doctor, Dr. G, George Abellino. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Good evening, yes. It's a very sad time in the wrestling world.
Yeah. As you can tell, we're not as peppy and obnoxious as we normally are to open our shows. We're a little melancholy. For those, we've been watching wrestling a long time, and, you know, things happen, deaths happen, and we lost another one from our childhood this week. It was, I think, Wednesday morning, we found out at the age of 60, just 60 years old, we lost the other half of what I consider, and I know my co-host considers, the greatest tag team to ever walk up an aisle anywhere in the world. And that is, of course, Joe Laurinaitis, a.k.a. Road Warrior Animal, who passed away at the age of 60, of course. Can you believe this? Next month, it'll be 17 years that Road Warrior Hawk passed away in October of 2003. That one, sadly, we all kind of knew from in and out that something was amiss there. And if you watch the early 03, I mean, it didn't look that bad in the early 03 TNA when him and Animal were there. I mean, he didn't look as bad as like Kurt Hennig did. Kurt Hennig looked like he had one foot in the grave, and in February of 03, he would. But he looked terrible. Hawk actually didn't look that bad, but he would pass away.
Well, Hawk, I think he had just gotten married. I think he was moving into a new place, I think, when he had passed. I guess he wasn't feeling well. And I believe that Animal or Joe Laurinaitis was a Christian, and I think he got Hawk to kind of come around, you know, like some of those guys like Sting and and Ted DiBiase, you know, to find Christ. And he, and so I think he was getting in a good place. So, which he hadn't been in for a while. And I know that, you know, the animal took that really hard. He had some trials and tribulations. He's spoken on his podcast before. It wasn't always some easy times when they were teaming together. And then when Hawk went over to Japan and started the, was it the
Power Warriors, I think?
Or yeah, something like that.
With,
so, you know, they had their ups, they had their ups and downs, you know, obviously as friends. And Hawk was very eccentric and, you know, a big partier. And believe it or not, Animal wasn't, you know, I'm sure he had his times, but he wasn't to the extent that Hawk was. But this was much of a surprise. I mean, I was just listening to his podcast last week and just so full of life and loves doing the autograph signings. And he was excited about going to Jerry Lawler's 50th anniversary on the 26th of September. And I'm shocked. I was shocked
today.
Actually, I didn't even did you tell me? I forget. I got a text.
Me. It was me. That
yeah, told you. It was you. It was you. Okay. Because
I saw it on Twitter.
Friends texted us as well, so that's why I was trying to remember.
Yeah. I saw it on Twitter. Hulk Hogan posted something on Twitter, and then I guess Tommy Dreamer confirmed it short time later. Power Warrior was – so what happened was just to clarify – well, let's talk about their career real quick. We won't – yes, we are going to do a recap of the second episode of UWM Primetime Live this week. We are going to get to that. But we can't we'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about Dr. G's and my favorite tag team ever. You can call this the Superstar Spotlight, if you will, for this week. But with Animal going now, Heaven's pay-per-view is getting better and better. So obviously, and now, little trivia question here for you, Doctor. Eddie Starkey had that crew of guys in that St. Paul, Minneapolis area that he trained. It was four guys. Three of them are now dead. Can you remember who the fourth one was? He's still alive.
He's still alive?
Yeah, the fourth guy is still alive. There were four guys.
Well, Crusher Khrushchev.
Correct. That's, you got it right. Barry Darso. Barry Darso. Crusher Khrushchev. Of course,
you know, I'm using Crusher Khrushchev because I'm on Crock and Roll. Where, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, he's, yeah.
He's prevalent in 1985, so that's yeah, why no, he was calling him.
He was Demolition Smash. He was whatever the hell he was. Repo Man and all those others. The rest of that crew, of course, were both Road Warriors, Hawk and Animal, and, of course, Ravishing Rick Rude was also in that bunch, too. And then the Road Warriors would start in Georgia. Animal was alone at first, and then Ole paired him up with Mike. They had known each other. And they formed the Road Warriors in 1983. So there's one thing Ole can get credit for, that miserable prick that he put together the Road Warriors. They were initially brought into Precious Paul Ellering's stable as a replacement for his team of Matt Bourne and Arn Anderson after Bourne was fired. After a few months of rapid success, the Road Warriors dumped Ellering as manager, claiming they needed no manager. This was short-lived. As in early 84, Ellering formed a stable called the Legion of Doom.
Yeah, Jake the Snake was in Jake that.
The Snake, yep, and the Spoiler with the Road Warriors. The stable was short-lived. Legion of Doom soon referred only to the Road Warriors and Ellering. Of course, that would be interchanged back and forth. You know, Legion of Doom, Road Warriors, depending on what promotion. Probably some of my favorite Road Warriors moments. And if you have the DVD that the WWF put out in, you know, mid 2000s, I think. Yeah, because it was after Hawk died, so it was like 2004. I think it was like 2005, 2006. I think my favorite Road Warrior matches are when you watch them in Georgia. They just run in. They have the black pads, and they run in, and I don't even think they have pads yet. I think it was just like they had like leather chaps. They looked like Judas Priest. I think they had leather chaps and leather,
they had that more motorcycle guy.
Yeah,
why am I motorcycle gang like cuts, look
like leather. vests, and they throw the shit off, and then like you'd see these two fucking stiffs, George South or, you know, one of these fucking losers, and you knew that they were they literally were about to get their fucking lunch handed to them. It's like, yeah, good, congratulations on making your $100 on your $100 today. By the way, you're about to have your fucking intestines fed to you. And the Road Warriors will come in and they just fucking destroy. I mean, there wouldn't be like any, you know, give the ring announcer a chance to say something. I mean, they just fucking just pounded them into dirt.
They were just something
it was
unlike
to watch.
It was. It was something unlike that you've never seen before. You obviously didn't see that in the WWF at that time or WWF. And you didn't see that really in any company. And then just to have these two, you know, massive guys just pop onto the scene. And they were very green. I mean, in those days, they didn't usually didn't get a shot like that, you know, basically right out of the box.
Right, exactly.
You know, they put those guys together and they made them dominant right away. I mean, I believe they just gave them the national tag team belts, right? They didn't win their first national tag team belts, or they may have only held it one time, but wasn't it pretty much?
Yeah, it says here their high impact power style and unique attire quickly got them noticed by fans and dreaded by opponents so much so that some wrestlers would grab their bag and leave the arena when they saw they were scheduled to face them. In Georgia, the team quickly rose to the top despite being very young without the traditional paying dues period, just because they were so believable in their role as power monsters. They gained a reputation for being very stiff and not selling simply because they could, and as a result, most of their matches ended quickly. They won the NWA National Tag Team titles upon their debut, a title they would win three more times in Georgia. So these
were guys. They did beat a team for the belts, right? Yeah. I may be mistaken with somebody else, yeah, but I just remember them bursting onto the scene really quick and, you know, just becoming this dominant tag team right out of the chute. I mean, the only other people I could really say that, you know, or one person that was kind of like them was like Kurt Angle, you know, winning all those belts real fast.
Right.
In the WWF. I mean, even though
it was handed to them. It was handed to them. New Year's Day, 1983, the Samoans had the belts. They refused to defend against Tommy Rich and Paul Orndorff, but in reality, they had left and headed up to New York. So on June 11th, 83, the Road Warriors won a fictitious tournament. Then they held them for a few months. Then
my mind's not going. I didn't get too many chair shots.
No, you didn't get too many chair shots. then they lost in December 4th of 83 to the Sawyer brothers, Brett and Buzz. They won it back January of 84. Actually, they were awarded the championship when Buzz Sawyer was fired. They lost in May of 84 to King Kong Bundy and the Masked Superstar. Then they were vacated again when the Masked Superstar left, and the Road Warriors beat JYD and Sweet Brown Sugar in a tournament final in May of 84.
I don't even remember them losing to those teams back then.
I know. And then 84, they left and went to the AWA.
Yeah, they went to the AWA, but, you know, and some of the stuff we're watching now, and I keep forgetting, and it could be, you know, because we were talking about it. One of the shows they were now, you know, announced as the AWA World Tag Team Champions on an NWA show. And I remember as a kid that being very confusing.
Right.
Yep. You know, because you didn't realize that Vern Gagne at one time, you know, they did split off from the NWA. And I want to say that Vern, I think, was still a member of the NWA committee, kind of like how Vince was. Vince Sr. was. And I think even when Vince Jr. first took over, you know, I was talking about that with a friend of ours the other day. When Vince Jr. took over the WWF, do you remember the first Victory magazine? They actually had a whole piece on Kerry Von Erich defeating Ric Flair for the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship.
Correct.
So they did a little bit on that, and then he changed and just went, you know, purely WWF magazine. But you know, it's interesting when you see, you know, them being the AWA tag team champions and then being in the NWA. But they did a lot of that cross promotion type of stuff.
Right.
You know, and AWA, we used to get that on ESPN. So we would see some of the shows and you'd see them on there. But I mean, I mostly remember them for their NWA days. And I know that they went over, you know, to the WWF and but to me, that period of time when they first started and, you know, in the mid-80s, just they were just dominant. They were just so different.
Yep. They On August 25th, 1984, they beat the Crusher and Baron Von Raschke for the AWA tag team titles. So that was the first of the trilogy. The Road Warriors were brought in by Gagne to work as heels, but again, as usual, the fans love when they squashed a bunch of fucking stiffs, like his kid. They soon became the AWA's top draw throughout 84 and 85, feuding primarily with the Fabulous Ones and later the Freebirds. Then they began splitting their time between the AWA and Crockett, so they were there together. They were there simultaneously. While you were while you're watching them now in your timeline, they actually were still in the AWA, technically. Yep. They started feuding with the Russians while still holding the AWA belts. At the time, they were co-promoting cards in an effort to compete with the WWF. Hawk and Animal lost the AWA title to Jimmy Garvin and Mr. Electricity Steve Regal on September 29th, 1985, due to the interference of the Freebirds. The Road Warriors' last appearance in the AWA was on April 20th, 1986 at WrestleRock, where they defeated the team of Garvin and Michael Hayes in a cage. And I think that's a Comiskey. During their AWA stint is when they started using Black Sabbath's Iron Man. So, wow, the one smart thing Vern did, he let them go out to Iron Man, and now it's fucking cool.
Really? I for some reason, I remember them having it on the 605 show, but maybe it was when they came back.
Maybe. Probably when they were on Crockett after.
Now, sometimes my timeline gets mixed up. Do you remember when you were a kid, the AWA figures?
Oh, yeah. I had Rick Martel and I had Rick Martel. I had a weird combo. I had Ricky Martel. Remember, as Larry Nelson said, Ricky Martel and Baron Von Raschke. I had a combo with the AWA belt, like the little belt.
Yeah, I had a friend that had the ring and the whole deal. And I remember that the Road Warriors had figures. And Ric Flair was in that set.
You know what? I actually had the AWA ring. I think I had the Road Warriors, actually. Now that I think about it. Yeah, I did.
It was so cool because, you know, when you think about it, remember the WWF action figures were those big,
big rubber guys. Yeah.
Rubber guys. And I thought it was so cool to have these figures that actually, you know, the arms moved and.
Right.
And then the WWF eventually went to those. But I remember, it was so cool to see Road Warrior figures at the time because they were the best.
My brother always would, he's such a little shit, my brother. He used to go into because he used to have that cool case. He used to open up, like when I was at school or whatever, he would open up the case, he would take the world title belt off my Hogan figure and put it on my Paul Orndorff figure all the time. That fucking sleazebag heel. That's my brother for you. He hated Hogan. Anyway, that's a side story. Yes, I actually had. Now that I think about it, I think I had the Road Warriors. I definitely had Rick Martel and Baron Von Raschke. Now I'm pretty sure I had the AWA ring. It must not have been expensive. I can't imagine my father buying me that.
But I do remember, you know, and it was so cool it was so confusing. Again, didn't know all the insides like we know about things today. Like, why was Ric Flair in the AWA set when he was in the NWA?
Because he used to be that was strange. They would spend 5 years in Japan, but they would be in Crockett at the same time. And then on October 29th, 1988, they won the second of their trilogy, beating the then babyface Midnight Express. At the time, they turned heel. They attacked Sting during a defense of the six-man championship, kind of like what Callum McDougal's going to do to you two shitbags.
Callum is not going to believe it.
Claymore kick you fuckers, and him and Ben Locke and Rory McNamara are going to become the UK six-man tag team champions. I wonder if there was a UK six-man tag team champions.
Probably somewhere.
And then they'd be in Crockett for the most part, and they would be involved. I'm looking forward to when you guys get to the summer of 87, when you have those amazing war games, when it was the Four Horsemen. 87, it would have been what? Arn, Rick, Tully, and was it Luger? Or was it still Windham in 87? No, it was still probably Windham. Luger. No, because I think Barry turned heel in 88. I think it was Luger and JJ.
Oh, right. It would be, yeah, no, it was Luger.
Yeah. And then it was the Road Warriors, Dusty, Babyface Nikita. Who's the fifth guy? It wasn't Sting. Can't think of who the fifth guy is. Who the fifth guy in the baby. Anyway.
I remember now. But you know what? I mean, I think the what people don't remember, and even sometimes I had to remember, that they didn't become NWA Tag Team Champions, like you said, until 1988. Everybody, you know, and to think out of the trilogy, they actually won the AWA World Tag Team Championship first.
Correct.
You know, and again, I think most people think of them as NWA more than AWA, wouldn't you say?
Yes. Yeah. No, I agree. Definitely.
But well, because they were in Crockett around the, they were going back and forth. I think that's, you know, Crockett had a little bit more of the exposure, even though AWA was on ESPN. So, you know, it's just amazing. I mean, they were drawing money. I mean, you know, no matter where they went. And I, like I say all this all the time, think about if they just had somebody that had Vince McMahon's marketing mind. I mean, just even watching the stuff now, I'm like, oh my God, this stuff was so much better than WWF. When I really, really break it down and I look at it, but we were all attracted to that showy, you know, put on the, you know, the arenas with the bright lights and the, you know, the way that, you know, the way they shot television, you know, that's what made WWF so enticing to everyone, especially when you're younger. They knew exactly what they were doing. But when you want to go down to a pure wrestling match, I mean, the crowds were just into everything. I mean, I just watched a match today with the Rock and Roll Express and the Russians. It was on TV on Worldwide, and the match was maybe like 40 minutes or something like that. Scott, mm-hmm. Everybody was in to the whole, I mean, through the whole match, even though there were some slow periods in it, the crowd was into the whole match.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know if you'd get that today.
Right.
And the psychology and the way they broke it down, I mean, it was a great match. It's definitely in the top 100 for the GWCW.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. No, there's no doubt about that.
But when it comes to Road Warriors, no, the Road Warriors, you know, they had some good matches, you know, some great matches, but for the most part, they were known for annihilating people, and that's what you wanted to see, and that's what fans like us wanted to see at that time. And they were trendsetters, and you know, they both really, you really thought they were brothers because mm-hmm. they really worked that well together.
Yep.
And, absolutely. You know, they were announced from Chicago, Illinois, but Joe Laurinaitis was actually born in Philadelphia and, you know, raised in Minnesota. And I believe Mike Hegstrand was actually from Minnesota originally. But, you know, they were announced from Chicago, Illinois. So everybody thinks, you know, they were really from Chicago. Great wrestling city, but.
Correct.
I just, you know, one thing about, you know, Animal, it was, you know, Hawk had that outlandish personality, but Animal was the one that, you know, drove home the promo, you know, like, this is where we're basically just going to annihilate you when you get in the ring with us.
Yep. That's exactly.
I mean, I just loved, it's just one of those tag teams. That no, were you going to get a 5-star match? No, that's just not what they were about.
Right.
They had everything else.
No.
Yeah, and listen, they worked stiff. There was no doubt about it.
I think 5 stars was watching two jobbers get their fucking breakfast handed to them behind the woodshed. I think that's 5 stars for me. And then, of course, in my opinion, the greatest tag team finisher of all time, the Doomsday Device. Although the decapitation device of Demolition, as well as the heart attack of the Heart Foundation, also good finishers too. But the Doomsday device is the greatest tag team finisher.
The heart attack from the Heart Foundation is my second favorite.
They're all good. I know you have a thing for Demolition. So, so after winning the titles, and then turning on Dusty, got Dusty kicked to the WWF after they stuck the spike in his fucking eye, which is pretty cool. In June of 1990, they finally make their way to New York and the World Wrestling Federation. Now, here's what Wikipedia says. We talk about why Vince dumped the Road Warriors name and they became the Legion of Doom. According to Vince, it's because there was the Ultimate Warrior and Kerry Von Erich, the modern day Warrior, even though they really didn't call him that. So it was probably more the Ultimate Warrior. It's kind of why Steve Austin went with Steve Austin and not Steve Williams, because there was already Dr. Death. So,
well, he was, and Vince has always been funny about that. That's, you know, they made Shane Helms change his name to Gregory Helms.
Yep.
Because of Shane McMahon. So he's always done things like that. I mean, Legion of Doom's a great name. Don't get me wrong. That was the faction they were a part of. But I don't know. They just were not the same to me. I mean, I know they did have some good matches with Demolition. Don't get me wrong. They did have some good matches in the WWF. But I don't know. You know, these are just certain people that just, they were known for being in a certain company, and they were just NWA guys. That's just.
Oh, are you stunned? The Road Warriors left. The Road Warriors left WCW because they were pissed off at Jim Herd. Are you shocked?
Oh, that's something new.
Yeah. So, and of course, at SummerSlam 1991 at Madison Square Garden, they would defeat the Nasty Boys and would officially become the first team to ever win the NWA, AWA, and the WWF Tag Team Champ, the Triple Crown of the 80s. Of course, that would be matched by the Dudleys, who would win the ECW, WCW, and WWF Tag Team Belts. And then, of course, they would eventually make it four when they would win TNA as well. Then this is where things went downhill. They would leave briefly after losing in February of 92 to Money, Inc. They lost the tag titles to DiBiase and IRS. Would come back at WrestleMania 8 with Paul Ellering. And then they introduced Rocco. By the way, from what I'm reading here, they did a TV segment. His original name was Freckles. Apparently, the segment bombed so badly, it never aired. Wow. Couldn't believe that. I was furious when I saw that. And then to see him draped on one of the fucking motorcycles at SummerSlam 92 at Wembley. Really? They're the goddamn Road Warriors, for fuck's sakes. Do they really need a goddamn puppet for inspiration?
I just, some of the stuff, I mean, listen, as great of things that the WWF has produced, some of the things that they did, I just didn't understand. Sometimes you just wonder, is this stuff a rib?
I know, really.
When you think about it.
So they leave at the tail end of 92 because Hawk got pissed off at the Freckles thing. They go to New Japan. They be the Hellraisers. It was the Hellraisers with Hawk and Kensuke Sasaki. And they would be the he would be Power Warrior, and they'd be called the Hellraisers.
Was it that Animal was hurt? He mentioned it on his podcast one time, but I can't remember the whole story there. But I know that he wasn't. Animal was not too thrilled.
Yeah, when Animal came back from his back injury, he joined the duo in Japan in 96. The three were announced collectively as the Road Warriors, and they were still using Iron Man. They go back to WCW in 96, and then, of course, would return triumphantly to the WWF in 97 and would win the tag team titles for the second time. Then they bounce around the indie circuit. They would show up on the May 12th, 2003 Raw in a tag match against the then World Tag Team Champions RVD and Kane. And Hawk died on October 19th, 2000. And three. And then we would talk Animal and Heidenreich and all that crap, and we're not going to get into
when
that.
When was the stuff with when he was on the Titantron and
oh, Jesus. Hawk. That was in 98 with Draws, mm-hmm. And he would fucking come up to the ring drunk, and he'd have the motorcycle helmet on. He'd try to do moves, and he'd fall off the ropes, and it was goddamn
as
embarrassing.
As great as the Attitude Era was, there were some things that were just...
That was disgraceful. Absolutely disgraceful. That's Vince Russo going too far. Vince was too worried about feuding with Steve to fucking work to pay attention. But that was disgraceful.
Well, the boss had a sign off on it, so yeah.
I mean, that was sickening.
I know Animal was not thrilled with some of that stuff, especially that you know his friend was going through all that.
He's really going through it. It wasn't a joke.
No, it wasn't. And
cock and bull. Absolutely cock and bull. And absolutely disgraceful, that whole thing. That made me sick when I'm watching that again.
And you know, and one thing about Animal, listening to his podcast, he's pretty opinionated, and you know, he has things to say about some of the wrestling today, and you know, even his time in the WWF. I mean, you know, he respected Vince McMahon, but you know, some things he obviously didn't agree. He's not sure why he was being kind of blackballed there, but probably because he is very opinionated in what he had to say. But you see the stories, you know, when you see, you know, stuff on Twitter and Facebook about how good of a guy he is. I mean, he truly is, and I know from listening to his podcast, he loved bringing his pads. He was always, you know, fixing up his, you know, spiked pads to bring out so, you know, people could take pictures. Sometimes they'll let the, you know, the fans take pictures with the pads on. And he really, truly loved. And listen, we know he was going out there. I mean, this is how some of these guys, you know, kept themselves working, was through these shows. But he took the time, though, so when people did pay for his autograph, to make sure he gave them a moment that they would remember. And he loved being with the fans. And, you know, did you, what was there was a story, I don't know if I don't want to totally speak out of turn, but I just saw the other day, I guess there was a promoter at one of the shows. He was having a hard time paying all the guys. I don't know if he just didn't do well or whatever. And he gave, you know, his portion of the pay to make sure that everybody else got paid, you know, on the show that he was on. You know, he was just that type of guy behind the scenes. Like, you know, he was always trying to help. He was a great father. I mean, you know, his son James, who played for the Rams most of his NFL career. I know he sent out a tweet and he was really hurting and was in shock, but they were very close. He was you know, with I want to say he had two sons and a daughter, I believe.
Yes. And there's a great picture on Twitter. There's a great picture on Twitter of Animal wearing his son's Rams jersey and James wearing his dad's face paint. He shaved his head like a mohawk and put on the pads. It was pretty cool.
But he was, you know, he said that, you know, when he had, you know, he was always, it was a very sports oriented family and, you know, always took time to, you know, train his kids or, you know, work out with his kids. And, you know, and it's sad because he died on his anniversary, his wedding anniversary. Yep. As a matter of fact, his last tweet was to say happy anniversary to his wife. And I don't think any more details have come out besides the fact that I believe they were at some resort in Missouri. His wife called around 10 of midnight on, I want to say it was Tuesday night, I guess.
Well, it was Tuesday night, because we found out about it all in the morning.
And by the time they arrived, he was already deceased. But
it was rough.
It was a shock because, like I said, I you know, and I think he did a show. I think he does some kind of show for Sportskeeda or something, you know, reviewing the Raws. I think he did it on Monday night. And I, like I said, I just listened to his podcast last week, and I know he's excited about going to see Jerry Lawler.
Yeah.
You know, the Jerry Lawler.
Today. If you're listening to this on Saturday, it was tonight. It was supposed to be tonight. If you're listening to it Sunday, it was last night. So, what is your lasting memory for you of the Road Warriors? There.
But I think Nikita was a face at the time. So he was, you know, Nikita, and then somebody was Dusty, you know, like that whole crew. And, you know, people used to even sign my yearbook. You know, I have it somewhere saying, you know, Animal, you know, that's what they call it. So I just that's how much I loved the Road Warriors, and especially Animal. Animal was my favorite of the two.
Right.
And just remember having that big Crockett Cup poster on my wall. And, you know, as you know, the kayfabe kind of broke, you know, in the 90s and 2000s, mm-hmm. You got to know these guys more on a personal level through podcasts and shoot interviews. It was nice to see a different side and know that, that Joe Laurinaitis, who played Animal, you know, even though he was a tough guy, he was a good guy.
Yep.
And, you know, the wrestling world lost another good one.
I agree.
And it's, that was a tough one. That was a tough one because it came out of nowhere, and he just always seemed full of life, especially on his podcast. But he's always doing some kind of show. I mean, even, you know, as things started opening up again, he was back being busy. But He always expressed that he could not wait to see the fans.
Yep.
And, you know, spray painting his you know, spike, you know, his pads, you know, spike pads. He always wanted to give everybody some kind of enjoyment. And it's kind of one guy I wish I got to meet.
You know, yeah, I sadly never got to meet. Yeah, I never got to meet either Road Warrior either. I saw them live a couple times.
Right.
But Wolf did. But sadly, no, I never got to see them like at conventions or anything. It's kind of a bummer. For me, it'll always be watching those early Georgias and just seeing guys get just fucking flayed. And then to watch them and to follow them on all the mags. They won tag team. PWI, I think, named them Tag Team of the Year like five times or something. They were in the list, the top 100 tag teams of the quote PWI years. They were, of course, number one. And I don't think there's any dispute about that. Yeah. Rest in peace, Animal. Another great
He's going to be missed. And, you know, I know he was really excited too. I guess they re-released through one of the companies, the Buddies, you know, the Wrestling Buddies. So they had
a limited edition. Yeah.
Yeah, they made some new ones that he was talking about on his podcast. I have to look them up somewhere. But he, you know, he was excited. And I know, you know, what he was talking about, too. He did a special shirt with Thunder Rosa.
Oh.
So she could sell, you know, to help her out, you know. So they did like a picture together, and then they did a shirt, I think, on Pro Wrestling Tees.
And to honor him, Wednesday night on Dynamite, she actually did her half, instead of her normal half face paint, she actually did half she did the spider and the same kind of white red color combo that Animal had. So she honored Animal on Wednesday night on AEW Dynamite, which was very cool.
Yeah, he was speaking very highly of her and wanted to help her out. So he did a picture with her because it was one of the indie shows or whatever. They kind of became friendly. And so they did that. And, you know, again, he was always looking to help everybody out, always looking to, you know, he always said, you know, if people want my advice, I'll try to help them out. Because, listen, he knew that, you know, people helped he and Hawk out when they were starting out. That, you know, pay it forward. And that's what he tried to do. And, you know, I think he would have been valuable to WWF, AEW, Ring of Honor, whoever wanted to use him as, you know, an agent. Because he even though, like you said, he wasn't going to give you a five-star match, but he understood the business. And he was very successful. And the Road Warriors, again, I mean, they made a lot of money in their day, but and they did go to WWF eventually in 1990, but think about if they had Vince's marketing machine back when they were really hot in the 80s. Wow. I mean, they I think could they did have, okay in WWF, don't get me wrong.
They could have had the bar. I know you say that a lot, and sadly, they could have probably had the marketing machine if they fucking knew what that even meant. But that's why Vince was different than everybody else. And unfortunately, had Crockett not thrown money away pretending to be the Horseman when he wasn't, they should have had better marketing.
What's the pants that they wore? These
Zubaz.
I know they made a lot of money off that because they were making.
They worked out. They had a licensing agreement with the NFL. You could get like you could have gotten like red and blue and white Giant Zubaz. I could have got white and blue right. and silver Cowboy Zubaz. I think they had a licensing deal with the National Football League to do NFL Zubaz pants. I'm pretty sure. You could have got like Packer, green and gold Zubaz pants. It's pretty cool. Raiders had like silver and black.
They definitely they were just a unique team that really, and don't forget about what that team with Paul Ellering meant to them.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, Paul Ellering truly was a manager. I know they always use that term loosely in the wrestling business, to gain the heat and do all that kind of stuff when it came to wrestling. But he was the one that booked the hotels, booked the rental cars, and he loved them and they loved him.
And, absolutely. One of the greatest managers of all time, and he only had to manage two guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the wrestling world again just took another hit.
Yeah, it did.
And, prayers go out to the Laurinaitis family. And, I don't know what his relationship was with his brother, with John.
I don't know.
Years.
Not sure.
I'm sure they were fine.
I didn't hear my I meant to look on Twitter to see if he put anything out. But I don't know what their relationship. I mean, I never heard him talk negatively about him. Joe speak negatively on his podcast about him. But I don't really know what their relationship was. I mean, I guess at this point it doesn't matter. It just no matter what, our prayers go out to them and just it was a big loss for the wrestling world, and I know that how we feel, as friends, how we feel about the Road Warriors. And there might be some of the people that don't think that they're the greatest tag team. That's another podcast for another day. But
it depends on your taste, sure.
Right.
I mean, they weren't the greatest WWF tag team of all time. I had them on my list, but they were in like the 40s or the low 50s. The Hart Foundation are the greatest tag WWF tag team of all time, but the Road Warriors are the greatest tag team period of all time. But I did the same thing with my singles list. My number one WWF wrestler of all time is Randy Savage. The greatest wrestler of all time is Ric Flair.
Let me tell you something.
Oh, well, that was a heartbreaker. And matter of fact, JR and I did an episode of the Place to Be podcast because Randy Savage died on a Monday. So we did a tribute episode that night. Anyway, rest in peace, Animal. Definitely that's that War Games match from 87 should be on your GWCW list because it was a fucking banger. And WWE Network did not put a playlist up yet. They better do it soon. All right. So there we go. There was our tribute. And if you want to hear a little bit more about the Road Warriors, this week's episode of The Main Event, Nate and Steve got to gave their opinions on the Road Warriors as well. I kind of tempered mine because I knew you and I were talking mostly about it. So, Nate and Steve gave their opinions and their, heartfelt tributes to Road Warrior Animal and to the Road Warriors as a team. Because you got to remember, we didn't have social media or podcasts in 2003 when Hawk died. So we got to kind of catch up on that too. So, all right.
Definitely.
Now for the business at hand. And that is, of course, recapping this past week's second episode of UWN Primetime Live. The first thing out of the gate, you and I watched it, was they had an open. The production value was head and shoulders better Now, that you and happens. I couldn't watch it live. We watched it the next day on Wednesday. But according to our good friend Sean Kidd, the fight stream was 300 times better than it was last week. So maybe this week for episode 3, they'll start being more consistent with the stream is better. So a little bit different this week. We did have a great main event. Another title was on the line. But I feel like we definitely got a bigger taste of the UWN guys just as much as we did the NWA guys. Our opening match.
Definitely.
Now, we didn't have Joe Galli this week. Joe Galli was in San Antonio. We had Todd Kennelly and Alyssa Marino is her name. She's not bad. I'm not really crazy about him, but she's okay. The opening match, a couple of UWN guys, Danny Limelight and Kevin Martinson. Apparently, they've had a bit of a feud going on in Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. Not a bad match. Two small guys. They bounced around, pinballed for each other. Martinson got the win. Not a bad opener. I didn't see much in them charisma-wise. I don't think either of them really cut any promos. I didn't see any real ring presence. I know that's hard to really gauge without crowds, but
it is. It is very tough. The only little complaint I have in the announcing, I guess, if you want to say, is mm-hmm. just giving a little background on some of these guys would help a little bit, because you have to understand, not everybody paying for this watches Championship Wrestling from Hollywood or Championship Wrestling from Arizona. Mm-hmm. So I think you just a little background. I think I know occasionally they try to do it, but it would just help a little bit. And you're right. The ring presence, it's very, very tough when you don't have a crowd. This wasn't a bad match. I mean, nice opener, I guess, if you want to call it that. But nothing here that would say, I'm going to see, we'll see this guy in NXT or AEW anytime soon. Let's put it that way.
Mm. No, I don't think so either. I think that they're definitely still a little bit green, but not a bad opener though. And Kevin Martinson gets the win. Our next match, which was kind of promoted last week because he had a promo, Eli Drake, one half of our World Tag Team Champions, although we don't even know what the status of that is because James Storm is no longer under contract, taking on Watts, who was their former Heritage Champion. Decent sized dude, needs a little bulk, but he's tall. He's kind of a mountainous presence. I really enjoyed this match. Watts got in a lot of offense. Eli Drake did. Show a lot of ass for him, and Eli Drake won with his finisher out of nowhere. Actually, Watts was too busy jaw jacking. I was gonna say to the fans, but he wasn't. He was jaw jacking to the curtains. But I enjoyed this match a lot, and I've been a big Eli Drake fan back to Impact. We've talked about him a lot, even back on the Power recaps. He's a guy that I think can go far and keep things afloat while things are going on. Like, he's a guy I think that the NWA can rely on to be one of the faces of the company for the immediate future.
Right. I mean, they're losing some guys, Royce Isaacs today. So I'd like to see Eli stay with the NWA. I love his presence. He obviously does a great promo. He's one of those guys that, like, a tweener. Like, sometimes you really like Eli Drake, and then sometimes you're like, oh, shut up. You just want to smack him in the mouth. He's just one of those kind of guys. Watts was interesting. He has a little bit of presence, a little bit like another kind of guy you just want to punch in the face after a while. But I thought he did a pretty good job. I think Watts, what I want to say is Eli Drake, he was the one that basically this match was. He was in control of this match.
Sure.
But he did a good job of selling for Watts. Mm-hmm. He did a good job of, kind of elevating him.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and bringing out a good match. Yeah. You could tell, you know, that that Eli Drake's the veteran, and you know, he led the match, and you know, it was pretty good. I enjoyed it, actually. I really did. I you know, we weren't sure what we were going to get with this match when it first was announced.
Mm-hmm.
But it I thought Eli was going to win easier, you know, like going into it. I figured, oh, okay, Eli's just going to, you know, beat this guy. But they put on a really good a good match.
Mm, they
what
did.
What do you think? I mean, if I had a, you know, if you want to rate it on stars, I'd give it a 3.
Yeah, I would give it like a probably a maybe just under 2 3/4. But I definitely think Watts has a presence. I think he needs to be a little smoother in the ring. I feel like at times he's a bit clunky. He was trying to do like these punches, but clunky. He was going to fall over. He wasn't balanced at times. But he does have an in-ring presence that can be enhanced with some work still. Eli Drake works great in the ring, so that he had no problem there. So fun match. I wish I had I got remind me to time them this week, the matches. I thought that maybe I had done that and I didn't. But I would say this match is probably like 12 minutes, most likely. The opener was probably 9. This one was kind of quick. Our comedy match. You ready for this one? Oh, my God. I don't know what the fuck we were watching here.
Oh, my gosh.
The Friendship Farm, which is my guy. I finally got to see him. My guy, the world's sweetest man, the great Jervis Cottonbelly. You're looking at me like, the fuck are you talking about? This fucking guy with this weirdo fucking mask on and his weird hair and... You're like, you know this guy? Yes, I do. Thank you, Steve Willie.
The worst part is he's the most normal one looking on his
team. Don't worry about it. And then his partner, Robin Shaw. I literally have no words. I have no words. I mean. I understand big dudes like, you know, like Bastion Booger and Big Daddy V and like big fat dudes. But I mean, this fucking guy, Dusty had moves, but I mean, Dusty looked like he kind of worked out a little bit. This fucking guy, I mean, he might be working out with some like, you know, Klondike bars, fucking devil dogs. My God, he had like no muscle at all. I mean, he was just gelatin. I didn't get the gimmick.
I mean, this team was a Matt Rotella team, right?
Oh,
here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Rotella would be all over this. These two.
And for those who don't know who Matt Rotella is.
Yeah, they do.
He's a good friend of ours. He loves Bastion Booger. So
no,
there you go.
Trust me. The Place to Be Wrestling Network family knows him very well because he's gotten death threats. So,
well, the Friendship Farm, let me tell you something. My good friend, Matt, you know what? We have to show him this team because this is going to be his new favorite tag team.
Now they were taking on a team called the Real Money Brothers, which is kind of a mix of Street Profit and
Crime Time.
Crime Time, rest in peace, Shad. Yeah. But these guys were kind of great value, but they were fun. It was a fun match. It was probably like, I don't know, maybe 7 minutes, 8 minutes. It was gelatinous. I mean, the fact is he also had like these pink tights on, so he looked naked, which was even more horrifying to think of. It was bad.
When I think of the Friendship Farm, I think of the Oddities. Like they could have been part of the Oddities back in
everybody
the
come see late the greatest 90s. Show. Everybody come juggalo and I don't know if I think of that Robin Shaw guy in like the juggalo championship wrestling. Well, I mean that was pretty bad. Yeah, it was the pure comedy match of the show. It wasn't offensive. Like, I wouldn't take it as like, oh, my God, this match was like tank the show. No, it didn't. You needed a little comedy. Jervis does that. He ate the pin, and the Real Money Brothers moved on. Of course, UWN has their own tag team titles. They are being held by Static, which is like Chronic. I don't know. So they do have their own tag title. So maybe really Real Money Brothers are in that top 5 rankings for the tag team titles. Clearly the Friendship Farm is not. Besides, I don't think Andre's pre-made WrestleMania 3 belt could fit around this guy. So,
Eddie, think there's a shirt for the Friendship Farm on Pro Wrestling Tees that our pal Matt will want to get?
Yeah, I'll have to get it for him. He'll wear it. He wore his Paul Bearer shirt today.
I mean, I thought of him when I saw them. I'm like, oh, yeah, he'll love this team.
Yeah, he definitely will. Our next match is actually probably the sleeper match of the show. The main event we'll get to, and that speaks for itself. But this was the match that I did not know who either guy was, did not see it coming, but man, did it deliver. Carl Fredericks, who apparently, and this was confirmed by our very good friend Chad Campbell, is a member of the New Japan Pro Wrestling LA Dojo. So he's kind of like in the AAA. Not AAA like the Mexican promotion, but AAA like the equivalent of baseball AAA. Like he's that one notch below before going to New Japan. And he took on one of my other new favorite wrestlers from Queens, New York, with his Mets hat and his John Starks jersey. Do you remember his name? You don't remember his name, do you?
Slice Boogie.
Slice Boogie. That was his name. Yeah. Slice Boogie. He's my new favorite UWN guy next to Robin Jiggles.
Well, in the match, kind of just like both of those teams, you know, you think they're going to do something and they choke in the end.
But this match, you know, you could end up on fucking, you know, some other feed, you know. You could do show. Yeah, maybe Andy wants to do a show called Atherton's Almanac. You just sit and read the entire almanac from beginning to end. I don't get to chat. He knows I love him. I don't get to needle him a lot. So, by the way, on a side note, little plug here. The Andy started a brand new show over on the Pop Feed, Making Mount Rushmore. A lot of fun, really fun show. Quick list.
Where did he get that from?
I don't know. I wonder where he got it from. The first episode dropped last week, and it was me, Tim Capel. Let's see, it was me, Tim Capel, because you want me on the first of every show, because then you get the listeners. It was me, Tim Capel, Jacob Williams, and Sean Kidd, and we did the Mount Rushmore of HBO dramas and HBO comedies. So, and it was actually a very good show. So check that out over on the Pop Feed. I do needle Andy, but he knows it's in good fun, and he does do a good job. So that was a great show. So please check that out over on the Pop Feed, Making Mount Rushmore. All right. I wasn't expecting much out of this match because I didn't know either guy. And while we were watching the match, I messaged Chad and I said, do you know this Carl Fredericks? Because Todd Kennelly mentioned him in the LA Dojo. And I was like, okay, so he can't be that bad. I don't know if I could take Slice Boogie seriously, but meanwhile, these two guys actually had a really good match. And Slice Boogie
dominated
the action. He put a ton of offense in. Carl Fredericks would win it with his finisher, which is called the Manifest Destiny is the name of his finisher, which I think is kind of a cool name.
Elevated DDT or something like that?
Yeah, it's an elevated DDT. But it's a great finisher, and they call it the Manifest Destiny. I would say this match probably might have hit the 20-minute mark. I would say it was probably 18 and a half minutes, but it was really good.
You wanted your man Slice Boogie to win.
I did, complete with his Mets colored tights. What were your thoughts on – let's talk more a little bit more, though, about Carl Fredericks, because this is a guy who is going to be in the future. Let's put it this way. Chad said to me that this guy is further ahead in his development than Jay White was at this point in his career. And I think that's big praise because Jay White, of course, is one of the big studs in New Japan.
I have to be honest with you. This is the first time I saw him, and I was impressed. I was wondering, you know, because you mentioned that Carl Fredericks definitely had, you know, the great experience. So when you first mentioned that before the, you know, as the match was getting, I thought it was going to be a quick match, but I thought Slice Boogie did a good job. I think they worked really well together. I enjoyed it. I mean, it wasn't one of those like, oh, I want to, you know, get up and go to the bathroom during this match. I really it kept you entertained from beginning to end. And I kind of like that elevated DDT, the Manifest Destiny too. Nice move to, you know, signature move for Carl Fredericks.
Yeah. he's got the movements. He's got ring presence. He's a little, he kind of has that Kenny Omega awkwardness that maybe can be smoothed over with time. But he executes his moves very crisply. They worked out onto the ramp. I love, one thing I do love about the Primetime Live set out at Long Beach, the ramp has that Maple Leaf Gardens thing where it's even with the ring. So I dig that shit. And I feel like every match it's used. Because it makes that like plywood thud noise. So it kind of adds to the experience if they're out there. Carl Fredericks gets the win, and I think you're gonna see big things from him in the future. We do get a promo from our national champion, and I could really be the only one that says it now since Stu Bennett's gone. Shooter Stevens, otherwise known as Aaron Stevens. And he will be taking on, and for the first time, Dr. G, we're actually going to see one of the matches that was originally scheduled for the Crockett Cup next week, as Aaron Stevens will defend the national championship against Trevor Murdoch. I think I like Murdoch to win that match. I think he's going to win the title. Now our main event, which was talked about all week. We didn't have any COVID issues, so we finally get her. The Women's World Champion, Thunder Rosa, defending the NWA World Women's title against Priscilla Kelly, who kind of looks like great value Becky Lynch. But
that's your new thing, great value.
Great value. Yeah, that's a chat thing. That's like the new PTP thing. Instead of saying low level, because that sounds more insulting, we call it still a great value. It's kind of like, you know, affordable. It's like Walmart. Anyway. I wasn't expecting much at first, even though I love Thunder Rosa. Then Sean watched the show live before you and I got a chance to and said, guys, you are going to love this main event. And we watched it. It definitely passed 20 minutes. I would say this match is probably like 22 and a half minutes probably. But I tell you something. I had no idea who the hell she was, but Priscilla Kelly took Thunder Rosa to the limit.
She did.
Much more than I thought she would. She's got crisp moves. She was using a ton of submissions. She was cranking Thunder Rosa anytime she could. Thunder Rosa was giving it back to her. It was a fun little stiff fest. And again, probably close to 20 minutes, but just a fun back and forth. And again, you know, we talk about kind of similar to the Nick Aldis, Mike Bennett match last week, where you have the challenger just desperation. Somehow trying to find a way to win this world championship, and she just fell short. Your thoughts on the match? Thunder Rosa looked great, which is no surprise, but Priscilla Kelly, I hope she sticks. I mean, she's obviously a UWN on the roster, so she'll be around, but I was very impressed with her.
I was, you know, I haven't watched all the Dynamite matches of Thunder Rosa, so I'm just going to go by what I've seen, but this is one of the best matches I've seen Thunder Rosa in all the matches that I've seen, you know, with back on the power shows. Priscilla Kelly took her to the limit, and they really, you know, I have to agree with Sean. Sean was calling it a 5-star match.
Yeah, it was pretty close.
He really enjoyed it. And I don't know if I would have had 5-star, but I was pretty close to it. I really enjoyed this one because, again, much like last week with Mike Bennett, you know, just Priscilla Kelly came up short. But you saw the desperation, like Priscilla Kelly really, you know, again, really wanted to win this championship, wanted to beat Thunder Rosa. And this is what I mean, and this is what I love, and this is what wrestling is missing today in the big companies is these belts meaning something and being important. The NWA wants their titles to mean what they meant back in the 80s, you know, back in the 70s, 80s, you know, in previous years. And as you saw with the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship match last week and with the World Women's Championship this week was that the challengers are fighting because this is their life. This is what they want to win. And the champions are fighting for their lives and that they don't want to lose those championship belts. And correct. I just love it. I love this is what we love about the NWA. And this is why we wanted to come back to.
And it's bleeding over to the UWN roster. They're like, look, we're in this prime time, no pun intended. We're on this big stage, Fight TV, and we've got to deliver. So just as much as Thunder Rosa on a different stage, Priscilla Kelly definitely impressed. I mean, Mike, and the reason I'm just as impressed with her like I was with Mike Bennett. Mike Bennett's a veteran, obviously not just WWF, but years in his time in Ring of Honor. I'd never even seen this Priscilla Kelly before, and she's probably no more than 25, probably 26, and she delivered her end of the bargain.
She did.
So I was very impressed with her.
Thunder Rosa really is one of the best women wrestlers.
I think
out there
she
today.
Is.
I think she could be in the WWF or WWE.
She's
the
best wrestler. Yeah, I said it on Main Event the other night. She is the best wrestler in the world that does not have WWE on her checks. She's comparable.
Definitely. She's helped Oscar, the AEW women's roster, I believe.
Roster better than her. ROH is non-existent. Impact. Yeah. Better than most, but Impact's pretty good. New Japan really doesn't have one.
I would love to see Thunder Rosa and Tessa at some point.
Tessa needs to get her head out of her ass before she gets...
That's another thing.
So there you go. Show wraps up. Overall, the wrestling was really good. The star power was just a little less than last week, maybe because we had a world title match. I thought the production value was head and shoulders better. Fight TV did a great well. Let's put it this way. The replay looked good. Sean said the stream, and some other people I talked to, said the stream was fine. So definitely an improvement on the overall package. My only knock, and you can't do it every week, is that I feel like we didn't have the star power that we did last week. But this was a week where we got to see a little bit more of UWN's roster and showcase some of their guys.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the opening match with Limelight and Martinson was not bad. Eli and Watts, I think that's kind of the sleeper match of all the matches. I thought that, except for, with Watts being a little clumsy, I thought, based on going into the match, like I mentioned to you, I didn't think, I thought Eli was going to win pretty easily. So I thought they did a pretty good job with that. And I enjoyed the Frederick Slice Boogie match. I mean, really, there really wasn't a bad match on the show.
They all served their purpose.
You want to talk about the tag team match. That was more for pure entertainment. And you need that. So it did its job. But if you were going to rate all the matches, one-on-one, obviously that probably would have got the lowest score.
Right.
I would probably give this show about a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I would go with that. I would go with that. So this coming week, episode 3, this coming Tuesday, the only match confirmed is, as we mentioned, Aaron Stevens to defend the national championship against Trevor Murdoch. That was a match booked for Crockett Cup.
I really like Aaron Stevens.
I do too, but I think he's going to lose. I think Trevor Murdoch wins the title Tuesday. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't know if they're going to have... I'm going to say Shooter's going to keep it.
Okay. Shooter Stevens. I wonder if question mark.
But I like Trevor Murdoch, too. Trevor Murdoch is a good hand.
He's a great hand. I agree.
He's trained by Harley.
Yep.
He's got a good ring presence, regardless of, that he's not a chiseled wrestler. Doesn't mean anything. He could go with the best of them. And he adds some credibility to the NWA. And listen, if they gave him, if he won the national championship, you're not losing anything there. He's a good person to have to carry the championship. But Shooter Stevens is awesome. Degree national champion.
He is, but he's got to bring back question mark though. Like if there's no question mark, then the storyline's not the gimmick doesn't fly. So hopefully question mark comes back. We were supposed to get a great women's match. Serena Deeb, who just signed with AEW, was going to take on our former NWA Women's World Champion, Allison Kay. But Deeb got into contact with someone who had the Macarona, and she's going to quarantine for 10 days. So that match has been postponed. So I don't know if that match isn't going to happen at all, or if Allison Kay will have another opponent. We'll see. But that's a bummer because I was looking forward to seeing Serena Deeb wrestle because she was signed by, she's on AEW's roster, and I was looking forward to seeing her wrestle this week. But fucking vid still isn't going away. Those little purple balls of shit. So maybe Alice and Kay will have another opponent.
You know,
this week.
The thing is that, you know, speaking highly of Thunder Rosa and, you know, the attention she's getting, it's a great thing for her personally, but, you know, it just kind of makes you a little nervous that, you know, one of the two big companies may offer her a contract, you know, and
I'm a little leery that she'll go to AEW, but again, it sounds like she wants to go behind. She wants to help Billy behind the scenes. Apparently, over last weekend, she taped like 21 women's matches for UWN and helped edit for Billy and together. So she wants to do behind the scenes stuff, videography, editing, kind of the stuff that Dave was probably doing.
I hope so.
That shit happens. So we'll see. I don't want her in the WWF right now. The WWF doesn't need her. I'd rather her, if she's going to go to one of the two, she might as well go to AEW because their women's divisions is not good. She'd just get lost in the shuffle in WWE. So I'm sure they'd think she was too small. Although Vince doesn't really give two fucks about the women's division. So maybe the guys like Triple H and them may find some respect in her. So give Thunder Rose a little time and she'll be somewhere. So, all right, that'll do it for this week's Saturday special. Next week, we will recap episode 3 of Primetime Live. We'll see if anybody does face Allison Kay, and we'll see if Shooter Stevens can keep his national championship and see what other matches we'll have. Third degree national championship. And question mark comes back. Will he? Will the face of Mongrovia make his return? You can follow Dr. G on Twitter at Dr. G PTB. I am at PTB Podfather. Follow our brand Twitter at Place to Be Nation. We have a tremendous cachet of podcasts. This past week, we dropped a great episode of With This Ring, Ryan and Cindy watching some Nitro matches for their GWCW lists. Another great episode of Row 1C1, Ben Zani, with another one of his great independent wrestlers that he talks to. So check that out. Great show. And Nate, Steve, and I with the newest episode of The Main Event. We talked about a little bit about NWA. We talked about the G1 Climax. Steve's been watching all the matches. We watched.
Did you talk about how you're going down for the six-man?
No, we're not worried because Callum's still going to claim or kick you in the face. But yeah, Rowan Seat 1, Ben Zani. He interviewed his good friend Nolan Edwards, who worked on MTV's Catfish and as well as wrestling. So check that out. We previewed this weekend's Clash of Champions. So there you go. Good week of wrestling next weekend. Of course, the third episode of Primetime Live. Then a week from tonight, or if you're listening to this as it drops, next Saturday, Impact will do Victory Road on Impact Plus. They don't do that very often. They don't usually do the big shows on pay-per-view or on their streaming app. They usually do it on pay-per-view and then it hits the app, you know, in like a month. But Victory Road is next Saturday night on the Impact Plus app. And then next Sunday night on the WWE Network is NXT TakeOver 31, where Finn Balor will defend the NXT title against Kyle O'Reilly, which I'm very much looking forward to. All right. As you can tell under the music, we will not be playing the normal closing theme. We will, of course, honor the Road Warriors by playing one of the greatest entrance themes ever. Rest in peace, Animal. Tell him, Hawk. He's the doctor. You're not.
Rest in peace, Animal. Ciao.
What a rush.